Today's program is brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, America, I'm Chad Pagano. I'm a former Army sniper. I'm a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education. More importantly, I'm an avid lifelong hunter, and you're listening to the Wild Game Domain from the Hunt to the Hearth, airing live on heritageradionetwork.org. So here we go, the end of the year show. Last of my second season. So first of all, happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas, and hopefully everyone out there has a great new year. And this is kind of a, I don't want to call it a sad time. This is a sad time of year for me. You know, it's kind of the white-tailed deer season is pretty much over here in New York. Upstate, it's done. It's over. It's illegal to hunt whitetails anymore. The muzzleloader season ended just recently. Long Island's still open for shotgun. By special permit and government interference, and you got to go wait in line. And I'm a member of a hunting club out on Long Island, and we have, 1,200 acres. So we get special permits. We still have to go to the town hall and get it endorsed and come back. It's something I really don't get involved with. I'm usually burned out by this time of year. I may go walk around the woods a little bit. You know, get my permit and walk around a little bit, scout out. It's a great time of year to scout whitetail deer, see what they're doing. You know, generally by January, we'll have a little snow on the ground, easy to track the deer. It's a beautiful time of year to be out there. It's quiet, it's cold. But as far as shooting deer in January on Long Island, not really my thing. I know last week we talked about, we had Joe on, my buddy, and we talked about the deer drives I was involved in. And that's kind of what goes on now on Long Island. And for me, again, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It's completely ethical. It is, you know, on Long Island, especially where the deer need to be culled, it's a good way to get those last few does, maybe a buck here or there down. But it's something I just don't feel completely right about. So we'll see. Maybe I'll get out and have a nice story to tell. But it's a time, you know, and I'm sure just for non-hunters, hunters, this time of year is a time for a reflection. You know, and I kind of look back at the whole season, and that's a long time for me because, you know, even prior to the season, my scouting, my preparation from equipment to checking out my properties, the cameras, the tree stands. It's a long journey every year, an exhausting journey. And this year, I'm kind of left with a weird feeling about my season. I don't know. I don't feel complete. I have two deer down and in the freezer. I'm very happy about that. I have plenty of meat. I've had better years. I've had years, obviously, not as good. So as far as actually putting meat in the freezer, I got a mature doe, nice sized buck. I should be doing cartwheels, and one was archery, one was firearm. You know, I kind of spread it out. Everything should be good, but I don't know. I just feel like this year was a little funny, and I think it starts with, you know, out of Long Island, October 1st, getting that big buck, you know, within 15 minutes of being at in the tree stand. And truthfully, with, you know, when I told you the story, you could go back to that show and listen. I know there was excitement in my voice. And I guess, you know, there still is in the story itself. It was raining. I walked to my tree stand just to kind of paraphrase the whole story and got my tree stand. And within 15 minutes, a couple of does that walked by, blew it. But then the big buck came and I downed the big buck, made a perfect shot. Deer went down not 30 yards, 40 yards from my tree stand. I actually heard it fall over, kind of saw it through the thickness of the woods in October out on Long Island. And at the time, it was very exciting. Got out of the tree, field dressed the animal, got back to the clubhouse. You know, all the formalities of actually killing a deer took place, and which I enjoy. But now looking back at it, I don't know if it was a great start to my season. It took a lot of the pressure off me as far as sitting in a tree stand and getting that first kill. But I also think it kind of weighed heavily on me, and I passed on a few deer that maybe now looking at I should have shot because I had that first deer down nice and early in the season. And there were a couple of decent six pointers that walked by at certain points that now I know I should have taken out of the herd. But listen to me, right? I'm sure a lot of you guys out there listening are like, oh, shut up, you whiner. I didn't even get a deer. I didn't even see a deer. I was talking to a guy in one of my classes. I do a wild game class at my school. And I said, who hunts? And, you know, out of 16 students, maybe there were like four hunters. And I said, oh, it's great. And we started chit-chatting, and it eventually came to light. This guy hunts in Pennsylvania, one of the premier hunting, northeast hunting areas, in the country. And, he said to me, I said, how long have you been hunting? He said, oh, I don't know. My father's been dragging me out since I was 12 or something and everything. And I said, oh, it's great, man. I said, we love it and everything. He goes, I don't know. He goes, I've never even seen a deer. And I'm like, what? Since he was 12. He sat in his tree for all these years. I don't know. He's probably in his 20s. And he's never even seen a deer while he's hunting. And I thought to myself, wow. See, this is normally when I get into a conversation like this, this is something I embrace. Wow, I could help this guy. He's obviously doing something terribly wrong. And then I thought to myself, this is too big of a project. I can't help this guy. He's obviously a lost cause. Been hunting since he's 12 years old, never even seen a deer. My wife doesn't hunt. She saw 14 deer this year, you know? So he's doing something wrong. But so, you know, I don't want to come across as a whiner. I don't know. Maybe it was the weather. It was the whole complete package. The amount of time I hunted upstate. All of these things kind of played together. I don't know. Leave me with an uneasy feeling. The Long Island season started with the federal cull of the white-tailed deer. And there was some rumors or there was some conversation among Long Island hunters that this kind of threw off the white-tailed deer patterns this year on Long Island. They were seeing a lot of nocturnal, movement by the deer. My cameras captured that. The big, mature bucks were definitely all moving at night. And so, you know, maybe they were spooked by that call. I mean, guys driving around in white pickups, federal agents with thermal scopes, silencers, and just taking as many deer as they want out of the system, had to have left a mark on the Long Island deer this year. I saw that in the deer. I don't want to commit to that 100%, but from one of my more successful tree stands where I know I get deer, I saw a lot of night pictures on my camera and a lot of sign. I mean, deer were definitely in that area, still using that area, but I think they decided, you know what? We're not moving during the day. We're only going to move at night. It's our best chance for survival. Maybe that has something to do with my my feelings about this year. Having said all that, it was every year, whether I get a deer, don't get a deer, have rainy days, sunny days, hot days, sun was in my eyes. It's still a glorious time for me, and I think another year of hunting is under my belt. My son is a year closer to being a full-blown hunter. He's moving up as far as his ability to shoot. He's shooting larger caliber rifles now. His archery work is getting really close to perfect, maybe better than mine. As soon as he gets some weight on that bow and he could actually take down an animal, I'm going to feel real good about putting him in a tree stand. So, a lot of good things came out of this hunting season. Yeah, that's it, Jack. I don't know. I've wrapped it up pretty good, huh? All right, thank you. Good night. You've been a great crowd. Enjoy your holidays. No, I'm only kidding. It's now 17 after. It's only 10 after. I got to keep talking. I'm very confused, Jack. The clock's wrong. I'm all weepy about this hunting season. Jack is my producer, if you don't know, and he's sitting in there being like, very nice to me, shaking his head yes, like he understands, but he's thinking, okay, jackass, you really didn't prepare anything for today's show, and I could tell that you're just faking your way through this, and I kind of am, Jack. I'm going to be honest with you, and I'm going to be honest with the audience because I'm an honest person. I got very mixed up about today's show. I wanted to do something really special, and I kind of focused all over the place, and I was trying to pull it all together, and next thing you know, it's 10 o'clock on a Monday morning, and I pretty much have nothing, except for the fact that I was just talking about the end of the season, and what I'm referring to is deer, because that's my primary love, deer hunting. We have, first of all, May 1st is spring turkey, my second love. Spring turkey hunting, archery, shotgun, however you want to do it. I love the challenge of spring turkey. So we'll, you know, in the new season, we'll talk about that. But so I have that to look forward to. There'll be a duck hunt here or there as we move forward through this winter. But for me, and I guess most serious white-tailed deer hunters, now is when we have to go back to work. For real, you know, I have to start earning some money again instead of spending it hunting, but also coyote hunting. Now's our time to get out there. And if you're a real conservationist and if you really care about the white-tailed deer population, you understand the problem we're having in New York State with the coyote populations, and you have to do your part. Even taking one out or two coyotes out of that equation are going to help the white-tailed deer herds upstate, which are doing very well. Which are doing fine, but excuse me. But we are on the edge. I really think we're in a position now in New York State where, through hunting, legal hunting with the guidelines set by the Department of Environmental Control here in New York State, we, meaning hunters and the government agencies of New York, have really done a good job establishing, for the most part, all over the state, healthy deer herds, healthy numbers. You know, Long Island's a mess. There's some towns around Albany and you know, the more populated areas in New York State where we're having problems still with the deer, really overpopulation of the deer. But for the most part, rural New York, the deer are doing well, but we are starting to see this increase in the coyote herds, and these coyotes are going to start decimating the deer herds. This idea that, no, coyotes don't really affect them that much. True, when in balance. The problem is the turkey population's doing well. The field mice. I mean, wildlife in New York State has probably never seen more success. They are flourishing from top to bottom, and therefore coyotes are included in that. They have more field mice to eat. They're taking down the smaller animals. They will certainly take down these newborn fawns as soon as the does, the recently impregnated does, give birth to the fawns. They're going to start hunting them. They're going to take these fawns out. They are known in New York, and I don't know about anywhere else, but I'm assuming their behavior is pretty much the same wherever they're found. These coyotes will take down full adult deers. They hunt in packs. They work together. They actually, you know, a lot like humans, they create drives. They drive deer. They push deer into certain areas. They use terrain. I've seen it personally out in the woods. I was sitting on my tree stand one day, and I heard, it was dark early morning. I heard a coyote. I heard what I identified as a deer moving pretty quickly. And just at first light, probably didn't even have shooting light, I saw the outline of a doe. And she was very spooked. And I probably could have shot her. There was enough light to put her in my scope. So, you know, legally I was covered. Probably could have shot her. Had the scope right on her shoulder. But I noticed she was real jumpy and she was looking behind. Something was spooking her, and I thought, oh, don't tell me some idiot is walking in the woods coming into his tree stand now after I've been here for 2 hours already settling in. And then I thought, oh, why are you such a pessimist? There might be a buck. Maybe there's a buck chasing this deer. It could be the beginning of the rut. So the doe scampers off, and now I'm waiting, and then I hear the leaves breaking. And I'm like, okay. And it sounded to me, and, you know, and I'm, again, my optimistic hunting mind, I've heard squirrels walking through the woods that sounded like the biggest buck in the world. I hear what I want to hear. But I heard the leaves breaking, and I thought, yeah, that's a buck sneaking up. He's trying to sneak up on this doe. Whoosh, 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 nice and soft. And I was looking, and I'm looking. Now the sound is really, really close, and I don't see any deer. And I'm confused. And now there's enough light to certainly see the terrain in front of me. And all of a sudden, I see a bush move. You know, little low-lying foliage kind of shaking a little bit. And I see a coyote pop out. And I said, oh, you got to be kidding me. It's a coyote. So I put the crosshairs on. And just as I was about to shoot, right, I hear crashing through the woods to my left where the doe had walked off. And now, all of a sudden, I see three or four coyotes actually pop up out of this bush line, and they start running into the clearing where I normally my kill zone in front of my tree stand, and they kind of run out in front, and then I see the doe running back, and she's being chased by four or five coyotes on her side. She eventually broke left, took off, eight coyotes chasing her at full speed through the woods, and I thought to myself, oh, what a disaster. You know, I could have killed a coyote, I could have killed the deer, I could have been in real, really good place. But I started thinking about what I had just witnessed, and really not a lot of guys get to witness that. I had witnessed coyotes stalking and trying to trick that deer into walking into their ambush. They had obviously had some coyotes set up. The coyotes I noticed first were pushing that deer nice and slow, just stalking behind her, pushing her towards her ambush. You know, that's an intelligence really no other animal possesses, you know, outside of wolves, coyotes, pack hunting animals, except, you know, and humans. That's who hunts like that. So we have a responsibility to take care of the deer for me. And that starts with a good coyote hunt. So in the second half of today's show, I want to get back into, you know, reinforcing my love of coyote hunting this time of year and talk about some quick tips. Because I know a lot of deer hunters talk to me, wow, you coyote hunt? Nah, I never did it. I don't have the equipment. I don't have the stuff. Listen, it's easier than that. You have the equipment. You're a deer hunter. With a minimal investment, you already have the tag. You don't even need the tags. You have a big game license. Go out and kill coyotes. So I'm going to help you out with that. Now I got perfect timing. So let's take a short break here. You're listening to the Wild Game Domain on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
White Oak Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to the Wild Game Domain on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Chad Pagano. Okay, so there I go. All my whining out of the way. That was my weak attempt at my wrap-up show. During the break, the quote, even the worst day of hunting is better than the best day at work, came to mind. So I'm not whining about it. I love hunting, love being in the woods. But, you know, again, now a lot of you guys out there, guys and gals, are out there saying, oh, the season's over. What a drag. Don't put your gear away yet. It's coyote season. It's time to go now. We go till February. Don't quote me on this. You'll have to look it up, but I believe it's February 15th coyotes go to. And it's a very, very exciting time of year for the coyotes. They're starting to scavenge. Winter's upon them now. Upstate New York, depending how far up you are, it's brutal. It's cold at night. There's snow. rain. So these coyotes are starting to realize we got to hustle to get some food. So they're going to be moving around. I'm sure if you're a big-time deer hunter, you've seen them during the year. We see them every year. A guy in my club, you know, always shoots three or four of them. I typically let them pass because I don't want to blow a deer hunt to kill a coyote during the deer season, but they're out there. So if you're looking for something to do now as a hunter, to be out in the woods, it's an exciting time, really, for us. It's kind of a reset, and it's a challenge, man. Predator hunting is one of the most challenging undertakings in the hunting world. You know, and really, if you don't want your area to be overrun with coyotes, it's the time of year you need to get out there and do some work. You know, at one point during this deer season, I sat in my tree stand overlooking my area, you know, and I saw probably 6 to 8 coyotes in the morning, you know, and that's just what I saw. So hearing them at night in the early season when we're camped out in our outfitter's tent there, we hear them all night howling. I mean, there's probably hundreds in the vicinity of my hunting property. So, you know, if you really want to improve the deer hunting in your area, you need to accomplish the reduction of the coyotes in your area. They'll go for the fawns, and like I said, they will take down a full-size healthy deer working as a group. That's what they do. Now, I know what you're saying. So, all right, Big Mouth, where do I start? Well, you know, winter camo is the way to go. These animals are hunters. Better than you or I. So you need to invest a few dollars and get some white camo. There's probably going to be snow on the ground by the time you get up there. You need to have some winter camo to blend into the snow. It's the only way around it. You don't got to buy anything expensive. What I did, I went out and bought like old fatigues, extra, extra large, to put over my regular winter gear. You know, Army surplus store type stuff. They sell the white camouflage, white and black, the old school stuff. And that works fine. I have a little ghillie hat I wear. I made a little winter hat. I take some white sheets. I stole my wife's sheets, cut it up, and kind of looped it through my winter hat just to break up the outline of my body. And that's all you need with a minimal, you know, I'd say probably $40 at the most. You'll have your camo you need to hunt these deer. You know, you need a high-powered gun. You're a deer hunter, so you probably got some. You don't need anything, you know, amazingly powerful or crazy or specific. I have a .223 that I set up specifically for coyote hunting. It's wonderful. Makes my life easy. Rapid firing. So, you know, I have multiple shots on a running coyote. But before I got this specific coyote gun, I used my .30-06. It's fine. You got a .270, that's fine. Anything in that range, you know, even my buddy hunts with a .22 mag. You have a .22 magnum, that's enough to take down a full-size coyote. So anything in that area, .222, .223, .22 mag, .243, .308, .30-06, .270, all the way through those rounds, you know, up into the good deer hunting rifles. They're fine, you know. You're probably hunting with a 3x9 scope on your hunting outfit. That's fine. That'll work. You probably want something a little more powerful. I wouldn't change my deer rifle for it. But, you know, I have a 3x12, slightly bigger, Bushnell scope, really nice for coyote hunting. Game calls. You're going to need some game calls. And this is where it gets a little tricky. Trying to decide on what the best call is, kind of depends on your area. There are so many different calls out there on the market. If you're just starting out and can afford it, you know, buy a couple of different calls. You know, rabbit or fawn in distress is a good one. Any kind of distress call, any animal distress call. I have a rabbit in distress call. It's the most god awful call you've ever heard. It's, you know, the screaming of a dying rabbit. But it does the job. It brings in the predators. It gets their interest coming. Gets their interest in what's going on. I have a buddy of mine, big time coyote hunter, and I get to hunt with him once or twice a year, and that's really when I kill coyotes, because this guy is good and he's got the area. He's got a beautiful property for it, some open fields. We call him into the field. He's got decoys. But he uses a series of different calls, and he actually likes to use turkey calls. In this area, he's got a lot of turkey. Apparently, these coyotes are interested in taking down turkeys. So he uses a combination of distress calls and actual turkey calls, where he'll do a lot of hen calling, a regular turkey slate, and he'll call in that way. To get started, get to your property. You've probably been hunting this property, or even if you're going to use state land, now the snow's on the ground, you're looking for coyote scat, coyote droppings, you're looking for tracks, coyote tracks. If you've seen coyote on your property, that's where they are. Stop it. Just figure out the lay of the land and hunt those areas. That's where you'll find the coyotes. They repeatedly hunt the same areas, knowing it's full of animals, whether it's deer, turkey, field mice, it doesn't matter. The biggest question is setup. That's where people always, it's where am I going to position myself? Should I get up in a tree stand? Should I not be in a tree stand? Well, you're going to be calling, so no, you should not be in a tree stand. They're going to pinpoint you up above them, and they'll be able to see you pretty easily. The main thing is you got to play the wind. And as a deer hunter, if you are a deer hunter, you know how to do this already. The coyote's sense of smell is just so highly adapted that they will pick you out really faster than a deer. It's how they survive. They have decent eyesight, but it's all about the smell for them. So when you're setting up, make sure put yourself either with the wind directly in your face, or like deer hunting, you want a nice crosswind. If you have the crosswind, you're going to be okay from where you expect the coyotes to come in. These coyotes act a lot like deer. And they will try, they'll try to circle downwind. They don't feel comfortable when the wind's with them as they're walking. They can't smell anything. So they always try to put themselves in a position where they're walking, downwind to find out what is making the calls. The coyotes will walk downwind, try to get an idea if they can't smell some. Sometimes they make mistakes, just like any other animal on the face of the earth. They get excited. They hear the screams. I've seen them running, downwind, come right in, and that's a beautiful thing. They have no idea you're there. So, the ideal setup, in my opinion, would be with a crosswind, and you want a decent amount of open area, shooting area, your kill area, downwind, to see if anything is circling. So, so you could quickly turn around and see if anything's coming up behind you. What I do is I usually hunt in teams, and we'll have two teams. We'll have one facing behind us. The first coyote I called in came actually stalking behind me. He ended up about 30 yards behind me by the time I heard a branch break, and I turned around. He was staring at me, and he ran off. That's when I learned my lesson. So you always got to watch that downwind side. The buddy system, it works well. You can position him or her downwind to get any coyotes that are circling. Try to position yourself with the sun at your back. I know now I'm throwing it a lot, right? The wind, now the sun, but you're going to want the sun at your back. Makes it harder for the coyote to see you. They have decent eyesight. They're going to be looking for a dying animal. So they are just scanning where these calls are coming from. You could also position yourself under a dark tree. I love, especially in the winter, upstate New York, find a big, thick spruce. It's going to keep you out of the elements. It's generally going to be a little dry under there. There's going to be less snow under there. Dark shaded area. So by using the shade, it will conceal your position a little better. This makes it difficult for the coyotes to see you. So you're in your position under your spruce. You got the wind set up, the sun. Now you gotta start calling. So the distress call, like I said, is the one I use, and it's pretty simple. First of all, if you've never heard a rabbit or an animal, smaller animal in distress, go online, Google the sound. It's a pretty nasty, scary sound. You could go on YouTube. There's hundreds of videos on what it should sound like. Most guys, beginners, and I made this mistake when I started, they think they have the perfect sound to call in a coyote. And the real truth is the coyote doesn't even really understand what that sound is. It's so far removed. Just blowing into the distress call doesn't do it. You got to actually try to mimic when rabbits are in a certain level of distress, they sound the same regardless. So you got to kind of pattern the calling, timing-wise, how loud that calling is. All these things have to fall into place. Because the main thing about calling coyotes is that, first of all, you know, there's a pattern, but you're going to want to kind of vary the pattern. You want to make it sound like, well, this rabbit got in some kind of trouble, was hurt, he was mildly hurt, and then all of a sudden it progressed to, I am dying, I am a dying rabbit. So you start slow and you kind of build upon your calls to full-blown distress. I'll typically call and sit in an area for about 30 minutes, 30 to 40 minutes on a stand, a coyote stand. And really, I'll only call total of probably 15 minutes during that 30-minute stand. Half the time I'm calling, I'm taking breaks, I'm calling, I'm resting. I'm varying the sound as far as how loud the sound, the distress call is. In the beginning, it's a lot. I start out calling a lot more frequently, every 10 to 40 seconds. Low volume, again, it's building, the drama is building. And then as I move, I get louder and louder, more distressful, but at larger intervals, the calls come out. Eventually just stopping the calling for about the last 5 minutes of my hunt at that stand, just seeing what's out there. I'm watching. I've piqued the interest of the coyotes, and now I want them to kind of feel like, oh, I got to move quick. This rabbit is dead, or some other coyote got it. Something's happening. Why did this thing stop screaming? Let's get to the area and investigate. And that's exactly what you'll see the coyotes do. I've seen them skirting the field I hunt, my primary coyote stand. I've seen them, skirting back and forth. And then the minute you stop, they stop. And they kind of look, and they can't figure out what's going on. Did this distressed rabbit just get up and walk away, or is it finally dead? And that's when they kind of get jumpy. And you'll see them come out into the field at that point to try to get a little closer. Maybe the rabbit's moving away from them, and they start stalking in. And that's when you'll get them usually in the last 5 minutes when you finally take a break from calling. That's when if you've had them come in, that's when they'll make a break for it and try to make up some ground and get to that rabbit. And that's when it gets exciting. Lay a big shot, lay a good shot on them, just like shooting any big game animal. You want to get that shoulder right behind the shoulder. Nice way. Thing is, you got to be a good shot. I like the smaller calibers for coyote because, again, nice repeat shots, no recoil. Again, 30-yard six, you're just going to have to time it. Wait for that coyote to stop, make the big shot. One shot with a 30-yard six, you're gonna take down a coyote. So that's it. That's the whole season. Go out there and kill some coyote. Help the deer out. They're a beautiful animal, and that's what we really like to eat. Well, that's all the time we have today. I'd like to thank Jack for engineering and producing today's show. I'd like to thank the whole gang at Heritage for their support and everything this year, man. They've been great to me. I'm nothing but a mess, and they're very patient with me, and they help me out a lot, hold my hand as I'm new to this broadcasting thing. Very, very supportive, the whole staff at Heritage Radio. So I hope the best for them in the new year. Hope the best for everyone. Hope the best for New York State. Hope the best for the families of our fallen. Everything going on. Let's keep our heads here in New York City and try to figure out this problem. So that's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us today on the Wild Game Domain. You've been listening to the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Remember, if you kill it, you've got to eat it, even a coyote. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.